Good morning. I'm Maeve Conran and you are tuned in to Community Radio, listener supported KGNU. Coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear about efforts to create a more inclusive workforce by encouraging employers to hire marginalised workers. A forum on this topic took place in Longmont last week. After that, we'll get another story in our series, The Brink. It's a radio storytelling project about what is needed to move to a more just environment and society. And it's a collaboration between KGNU and the Environmental Studies Programme at CU Boulder in partnership with the Just Transition Collaborative. This morning, we'll hear a report about water in Colorado. Then on Resistance Radio, we'll get a report about a rally that took place at the state capitol in Denver this past Saturday. It was part of a global day of action calling for no war on Iran. After headlines from the BBC at the bottom of the hour, we'll get a new commentary from Jim Hightower. Then on A Public Affair, the Community Foundation of Boulder County takes a look at housing issues. At 9 o'clock, it is Counterspin bringing us media analysis, and that will close out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, at 5 minutes past 8 o'clock, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
Denver District Attorney Beth McCann said on Friday that her office would not file charges against 38 climate protesters who were arrested for disrupting proceedings at the state capitol earlier this month. Before Governor Jared Polis was scheduled to make his State of the State speech on January 9th, the protesters from Extinction Rebellion and the Colorado Sunrise Movement chanted, "Ban fracking now," and hung two banners in the State House chamber. Many of those arrested spent more than a day in jail after the protest. In a statement after the DA's announcement of no charges, Maria Lauer, who was one of those arrested, said that the people are taking power back and will not allow children to be sacrificed for profit, adding that it's time for sincere climate action from Governor Polis. Jack Tangle, a member of the Sunrise Movement, said that Colorado Democrats are not doing enough to ensure a safe and habitable future for us all. Colorado Politics reports that Extinction Rebellion specifically wants a halt to drilling operations near the Bella Romero Academy Elementary School in Greeley, attended mostly by low-income minority students. In announcing no charges, D.A. McCann told Colorado Public Radio that the point was needed to be made that people can't disrupt an ongoing assembly, but she didn't feel any further prosecution would be warranted. State regulators have released a report showing over 100 unmet standards and violations at the Suncor Energy oil refinery in Commerce City. The report from the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment details leaks, unregulated plant flares, and dozens of cases of hydrogen sulfide and acid gas levels well above emission standards. Lucy Molina, who has lived near the refinery for 6 years, told Denver 7 that emissions from the facility are causing her and her children to suffer from migraines, bloody noses, and skin irritation. She is also concerned about Suncor's impact, and she has become a community organizer. CDPHE's report does not lay out a plan to cut down on violations and does not describe the health or environmental impacts of the violations, but it threatens to pull Suncor's permit and impose penalties of $15,000 a day. In other news about contamination, CDPHE is questioning safety standards for PFAS chemicals that have shown up in water sources. The compounds known as forever chemicals have been used in a wide range of products from firefighting foam to nonstick cookware. The contaminants have been found within fire districts in Boulder County and Front Range military bases, among other places in the state. The Environmental Protection Agency set us an advisory limit of 70 parts per trillion. However, John Putnam with CDPHE said that they don't really know if PFAS chemicals are safe. The Colorado Independent reports that a bipartisan bill pending at the legislature will allow the state to set a hard limit on how much PFAS is allowed in drinking water supplies. However, water utilities are likely to lobby to narrow the scope of the measure to limit how low a standard should be and how often they should be required to monitor the contaminant. Also pending in the legislature is a bill that could lead to creating real-time markets for water, incentivizing conservation. The Daily Camera reports that House Bill 1072 proposes spending $40,000 for research at CU and CSU to study water management technology, like remote sensors and cellular and satellite telemetry. Evan Thomas at CU Boulder's Mortensen Center and a co-author of the bill said that despite the relatively small amount of dollars, the measure could create a better understanding of the entire state's water portfolio. The technologies offer greater transparency than the current system that has ditch riders going around and looking at water meters on people's land. A spokesperson for Boulder County said that farmers currently use as much water as they can because they don't know if there'll be enough later in the season. But with more objective and regular measures of water use and availability, as well as forecasting, a farmer could be paid to conserve instead of being penalized for using less. Gary Walkner, executive director of the organization Save the Colorado, said that the technology that is being currently used to measure the amount of water taken out of a river is 19th century technology. Tomorrow, the Boulder County Commissioners will hear from the Eldora Ski Area on its proposal to expand its parking by more than 800 spaces. Some officials in Nederland are concerned that if the expansion is approved, there will be a significant increase in traffic, choking community roads on ski weekends. The Daily Camera reports that the County Planning Commission approved the expansion in December with no fewer than 17 conditions on it. Tomorrow's Commissioners' meeting begins at 9 a.m. at 1325 Pearl Street. In the day's weather, there's a chance of rain and showers before 4 p.m. and a chance of snow after that with little or no accumulation. The high today will be about 48. Tomorrow, sunny with a high near 47. Right now, it's 34 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, people who are marginalized in society often have a difficult time getting a job. People who might have disabilities, immigrants, people who've served time in prison. Well, efforts are underway to create a more inclusive workforce by encouraging employers to hire what is seen as marginalized workers. A forum on this topic took place in Longmont last week. KGNU's bilingual equity reporter went along. She spoke with one of the panelists, Cecilia Jones from Workforce Boulder County.
Right now, with the current law on employment and economy, employers have a role in order to make sure that not only they get the workforce that they need, but also a role in helping reduce the differing inequities, the inequity gaps that exist. And when I talk about inequity gaps, I talk about minorities and marginalized communities, people of color, immigrants, people with different gender and sexual identities, women, older workers. So I am here to be part of the panel, and I am going to be, from my perspective as a business services representative, I am going to be answering some questions about what programs are available at the workforce that can be resources for employers in order to look into different pipelines that have been historically overlooked and diversify their workforce.
Either because they are immigrants or either because they have learning disability, a physical disability, or they are not aware of the important services that they are there available for the community, they are even more empowered to go look into, you know, the communities that are in need. And this person becomes the bridge.
Absolutely, I agree, and I love the word that you use, being the bridge, and not wanting the name on the plaque on the bridge. So definitely, with my own experience, my own racialized experience as a woman of color, being an immigrant, I think that my why to do this work and to be here connect with employers is a big reason why I'm doing the work that I do. I'm an immigrant. I struggled when I came. I had a career, I had a life, I had a good job in my country, and for personal decision, so I came to the USA and I realized that I had to completely shift my life. I had to look for a different career, look for a different job. I was lucky to have the support, you know, family and friends supports to motivate me, cheer me up, keep me going. But I saw the struggle. I lived the struggle. And once I found a job, my first job here, and the opportunity to work with women that were struggling because they were domestic violence survivors, I saw kind of like how important it is to have the support and the resources available in order to get that first opportunity and to move forward. So my experience, my first job kind of like made me think about what I wanted to do next. And here I am. I'm working for the Workforce Center now. I'm, you know, helping employers, but also helping job seekers, you know, getting that sometimes that first opportunity through work-based learning, through on-the-job training, through internships, through apprenticeships. And my why has evolved, and now it's not only about job seekers, but also about employers, kind of like understand that there is some sort of responsibility to make sure that there is contribution and work to reduce the different equity gaps in the community. So they play a role on this as well.
What do you think people are going to learn today?
So for sure, getting multiple perspectives from employers, from agencies that are doing the work, that are trying to share inclusive practices for hiring, for recruitment, for retention. And I think that each of us is going to bring a different perspective. From my perspective, it's going to be kind of like my why I'm doing this work, what are my thoughts, or what are the biases that I see that are forbidding employers to open their doors to opportunities, to different pipelines of talents. And I'm going to be sharing the resources, how the different resources and programs available at the Workforce Center can help employers to diversify their pipelines. And I look forward to hear other panelists to see what resources they can bring, whether they are promising practices that they are applying currently, especially if they are employers. I would like to hear their perspective. If they are already doing some work for diversity, equity, and inclusion, I'd like to know what that work is about and how they are walking their talk.
Is there going to be other presentations like this around town or in Boulder County?
I know that the City of Longmont Sustainability Program has different events that they are planning. I really, really like the perspective. Like, even though it's a sustainability program, there is this social equity component. So I really appreciate that from Berenice and her team. And I look forward to hear more events that she is going to be hosting. From the workforce side, one of our goals for this year is to start creating the spaces for employers to come and get some information, get some education, having a round table. And I'm part of coordinating those round tables with employers. And for sure, I like kind of like to add some topics related to diversity, equity, and inclusion, and share some data, some information about what is the current state, what are the different inequities in the communities, and what are different pipelines of talents that employers could be thinking about.
It is a win-win situation. Mm-hmm. For the employer and for the employee.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There are benefits on both sides. I think that from my experience working, particularly with work-based learning, which is internships, apprenticeships, on-the-job training, what I find in common with participants is the motivation and the willingness to be trained and to stay, to get an employment and stay there. And from the employer is the opportunity to diversify their talent pool, get higher retention rates, have motivated employees that are going to stay at the work site for years. And, you know, it's going to reduce the cost of hiring for them as well.
And that was a report from a forum on how to create a more inclusive workforce. It took place last Thursday evening in Longmont. KGNU's bilingual equity reporter Rosanna Longo there speaking with Cecilia Jones from Workforce Boulder County.
This program is made possible by you, the KGNU listener member, and by Fisk Planetarium on the CU Boulder campus, featuring Voyagers, a theatrical performance offering creative access to science and math through the performing arts. More information at colorado.edu/Fisk or by calling 303-492-5002.
The Brink is a radio storytelling project that we're broadcasting here on The Morning Magazine, and it focuses on what is needed to transition to a more just environment and society. It tells the stories of inequality, struggle and transformation, and it is a collaboration between KGNU Community Radio, the Environmental Studies Programme at CU Boulder and the Just Transition Collaborative. This morning, we'll hear a report about water in Colorado from students Emily Lane and Robert Funk.
This is a sound that you may be familiar with. A quiet mountain stream running its natural course from the Rocky Mountains to the plains of Colorado. The connection between this and your home is more complicated than you may think. Current water law in Colorado may be unfit to deal with the unforeseen effects of climate change. Changes in climate will have adverse effects on the daily lives of many residents of the Front Range. To further understand the implications of climate change on water in the West, we spoke with Kim Hutton, a water resource engineer for the city of Boulder.
So the assessments that we've done, modeling different climate change scenarios and the effects that'll have on our water supply, we're seeing some seasonal shifts, as well as is the precipitation going to fall as snow or rain.
Through climate change, the reliable availability of water throughout the year will be limited. As temperatures rise, the amount of water held in the snowpack will diminish. The decline of snowpack, coupled with earlier and faster runoff timing, has the potential to disrupt the ways of life for both urban and rural water users in the Front Range. While the potential decline in water availability is alarming, when paired with the current system of water rights, it proves other challenges. Like many states in the West, Colorado uses the system of prior appropriation to dictate water rights. We spoke to Dr. Billica, a professor of political science at the University of Colorado, about this system.
Prior appropriations is a legal system for allocating rights to use the water, and it is based on those who arrived first, put the water to beneficial use, and established that right.
So then how did prior appropriations come to be the most prominent water law in the West?
This water rights allocation system did not arise from a public discussion. It's not a policy discussion. It was first and foremost a court decision.
Catherine Long, a third-generation farmer at Long's Garden in Boulder, speaks about the ways in which this archaic system of water rights and water availability affect her farming business. Long's Garden utilizes a long-standing right to water from Farmer's Ditch, one of the many irrigation ditches that run through the Front Range.
Our situation with the two ditches, so you've got this great water right in Farmers, that's it's early right, but it's just a direct flow right. So once the water has dropped in the creek, you're out of luck.
Even those with long-standing rights, like Catherine Long, have concerns about water allocation under this system. Long invited us into the well room at Long's Garden to get a first-hand look at how water is used in farming operations.
I open a valve that lets the water come in. So you can find there's a little leak here.
Yeah.
So that's allowing the water to flow from the reservoir into the pipes.
This system of valves, pipes, and pumps at Long's Garden is critical to a successful growing season. But without ample supply of water, growing season can be cut short. While the Front Range may experience water shortages through climate change, it is important to note that much of the water on the Front Range is diverted from the western side of the Continental Divide. The western slope is also facing issues of water shortage, only exacerbated by the rise of demand on the Front Range. Change in water availability has the capacity to impact the economy of the Front Range. While agriculture would take a large hit in the face of this issue, many municipalities and new ventures in the Front Range will be limited in growth by the potential lack of water. During our discussion with Catherine Long, she shared her view on one way that we can all be more conscious of our resource use.
Remember, you're part of the whole world, and you're also treating your fellow human beings, and that you're going to have give and take on things.
Water in Boulder and other Front Range communities is a valuable resource that is often overlooked. Water rights play a crucial role in the allocation and reception of water for all end users in the West. Without thorough understanding and support for these complex water management systems, future climate events may threaten the overall water supply on the Front Range. So next time you turn on a tap, take a moment to think about the complex systems that brought this vulnerable resource to your community.
And that report was produced by Emily Lane and Robert Funk. They are both students in the Environmental Studies program at CU Boulder. That report was part of the series The Brink that we're bringing you. It'll wrap up tomorrow morning with a look at the wildfires in California and what we can learn from that, particularly how some more vulnerable populations are least prepared to deal with this, particularly how emergency alerts are distributed, and that's seniors. So we'll hear a report on that as we wrap up the series The Brink. That'll be tomorrow on The Morning Magazine. Well, it's time now for Resistance Radio. And this past Saturday, rallies took place around the globe, organised by a coalition of organisations, including Code Pink, calling for no war on Iran. KGNU's Hannah Lee Myers was at the rally that took place at the state capitol in Denver.
For jobs and education,
not for war and occupation.
We're out here today because we want to educate people and agitate people and demand that the U.S. government stay out of the Middle East. All aggressions against Iran and against Iraq, all the military bases that they have there, we want them out. As you know, there's been escalations against Iran with the assassination of Soleimani and with sanctions increasing. And we just want people to know every single form of aggression, from simply having a military base at their border threatening them to sanctions, is an act of war. And we know that the U.S. doesn't have any just ends in the Middle East. What they're there for, imperialist domination. And so we're calling for them to get out of the Middle East, take all the troops out of the Middle East, every country, Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, but specifically right now Iran, because of the situations that have been going on with it.
Okay, so what brings you out today?
I disagree with war. I disagree with the U.S. troops being out in the Middle East.
And what is there something specific? What concerns you the most about the Iran potential conflict?
Because it's not what the people want. It's what the U.S. government wants, but it's not what the people want. And if this country is supposed to be a democracy, I want to make my voice heard as a citizen of the United States that I don't want war. I do not want people to die for no reason.
Well, I am against the war. I'm against all of the wars. And I remember in the 90s when we made up a bunch of reasons to go bomb Iraq. And I didn't like it then, and I don't like it now.
What is it about this particular conflict that you're most concerned about?
Because there were kids in my graduating class from high school who were killed in Iraq and Kuwait. And here we are, and I'm worried about my son.
Yeah, so sanctions are often, sort of presented by politicians in the mainstream media as being a peaceful alternative to war. But in reality, sanctions are an act of war because they deprive countries of necessary medicines. They deprive them of food. They're a direct attack to the people of those countries. And it's a political... there's a political motive behind sanctions. The purpose is to starve out the country and drive unrest among the people so that they protest against their leading bodies, which are often at odds with the U.S. Imperialist agenda. And so that's why they put sanctions on countries. So, you know, in Iraq, millions of people have died because of sanctions. In Venezuela, millions of people have died because of sanctions. And if the sanctions continue in Iran, they will also kill millions of people.
That last voice we heard there was from Bruno, who is with the Answer Coalition, one of the organisers of the rally that took place at the state capital in Denver on Saturday, part of a global day of action calling for no war with Iran. Globally, Code Pink was a part of the organising force, and locally, the Answer Coalition was who brought folks together at the state capitol on Saturday. And thanks to KGNU's Hannah Lee Myers for that report. It is 8:28. You're listening to KGNU, and it's time now for the Resistance Radio calendar.
Now we got a revolution, 'cause I see the face.
Tomorrow evening from 6 to 7:30pm at the Boulder Public Library, the Meadows branch on Baseline Road, you can hear a talk about agroecology with folks from Olin Farms, who will talk about how they're using agricultural practices that build healthy soils, sequester carbon and provide ecosystem services. They'll talk about their experience partnering with the National Resource Conservation Service to develop a conservation plan for their open space parcel of land that Olin Farms lease. That's tomorrow evening at the Meadows Branch Public Library in Boulder. That's on Baseline from 6 p.m. On Friday from 5 to 7pm at CU Boulder, a talk on decolonising your diet, a discussion on food sovereignty and food justice, and a discussion on the meaning of decolonising our diets. There'll also be delicious, healthy foods being served as well. This is part of the Student Forum for Climate Justice 2020.
Just to communicate.
And in Denver on Saturday, January 31st, from 5 p.m. at the Mercury Cafe, an Extinction Rebellion night. If we're heading for extinction, what can we do about it? There'll be a social evening, music and poetry. This is all happening at the Mercury Cafe on California Street in Denver from 5 to 9 p.m. Friday, January 31st. You can find out more information about those events and others online at our Resistance Radio calendar. Just go to news.kgnu.org and click on Resistance Radio.